It's an honor to be here in Switzerland again, and particularly Basel. I've never been here before. Dominic said that because I walked into the ladies' restroom and said, "De men." I don't know German. But no, I am a man, and I was promptly redirected to the men's restroom. Herrer. Okay, I'll learn, but it'll take me some time. But you know, we're not here really just to talk about how a couple or three buildings went down. There's something much more important about the subject tonight, about the destruction of these three towers, and that is that we've invaded two countries and killed a couple of million people in Afghanistan and Iraq. We have a $4.5 trillion global war on terror that has commenced as a result of what? 9/11, chiefly at the World Trade Center. We've lost civil liberties. In our country, we can be arrested for being associated with terrorism. We can be held indefinitely without a right to a trial, a lawyer, a jury. This is extremely important. If there's any question about what happened, how these buildings came down, then we ought to be investigating it. It's extremely important. Let's see who's here tonight so we can get a sense in the room where we're starting. How many of us, I'll ask you three questions. How many of us pretty much believe the official story? That planes hit the towers came down as a result of airplane impacts and fires. How many of us are unsure of how the towers came down? Heard a few things here and there. You're here to check this controversy out. And how many of us may have done some research and come into the room thinking that we do need an investigation already? First question, how many of us pretty much believe the official story? No reason to believe otherwise. This is what's been told to us by our government and the media. Really high. I'm actually want to get a count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. How many of us are unsure? You're just not quite sure where you stand. Really high and go like this. Okay, that's 78. And how many of us have done some, I'm really good. He told you I was good. How many of us looked at this and come to the conclusion that, hey, we need an investigation here? And that's about 88. Okay, that's awesome. You should know a couple of things about me, just because you should. I've been an architect for 30 years, and I've worked on mid-rise office space and these gymnasiums, $3 and $5 million gymnasiums, this $125 million construction administration for this high school, and more recently, near Las Vegas, this six blocks of retail and mid-rise office space, altogether about 1,200 tons of fireproofed steel framing. That's all you get to know about me unless you do some more research, in which you'll find out that I represent 3,000 architects and engineers now demanding a new investigation of the destruction of these towers. By the way, how many architects do we have in the room? Real high. There's one. Two, three, four, what?
And engineers.
And engineers are next. They always outnumber us. Engineers in the room. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I told you. How many normal people? Okay, great. We need you guys too. In fact, 20,000 normal people have also signed our petition demanding a new investigation in addition to the 3,000 architects. One of the questions they have is, like Dominic said, 3,000, a third tower came down? What are you talking about? How many of you didn't know about a third tower, or just not much at all, relatively unfamiliar, about a third of you? We're going to talk about this today. It's really important, and you'll find out why in a second. We have 47 stories. That's That's almost as tall as the Roche building here in Basel. So imagine that building coming down in the fashion that you see these buildings. Now, it was the tallest building in most of our states in the United States, certainly not New York, where it stood only half the height of the Twin Towers, the tallest buildings in the world at the time that they were built. It's part of the World Trade Center complex up here on the north side. So, yes, it's about 100 yards, a football field away from the North Tower. And when the Twin Towers came down, it got hit by some of the beams that flew off of the towers, which you'll see in a moment. But it's standing just fine until about 5:20 in the afternoon, at which time it descends like you see here. First, the East Penthouse falls, and 6 seconds later, the entire building descends. Now, that really happened, and this is the official cause of that.
What we found was that uncontrolled building fires caused an extraordinary event. The collapse of World Trade Center 7 was primarily due to fire.
Primarily due to fires. Well, these are the fires that it's primarily due to. According to NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked by our Congress to explain what happened to all three of these buildings. But these are the worst fires that we have photographic or video evidence of in the building. And those fires started in the afternoon and burned until the building came down. And so NIST focuses their effort on this one column underneath that East Penthouse because it came down 6 seconds prior to the overall building. And so they have a theory of collapse, which basically means one column gave way and the rest of the building came down 6 seconds later, which we look at in detail in our webinar to architects and engineers, which happens every Thursday. You can go to our YouTube and take a look at 9/11, An Architect's Guide, an extraordinary series. Every month we give all three parts of this important story, starting with Building 7. But what we've found is that there's been more than 100 much hotter, larger, and longer-lasting fires in high-rises, like Los Angeles burning 3.5 hours over 5 floors, Philadelphia 18 hours over 8 floors, Venezuela 17 hours over 26 floors. None of them have collapsed. Prior to 9/11, we have none at all. But we do look at what can bring buildings down and what has brought buildings down intentionally, historically, controlled demolitions, because we have dozens of them every year bringing these buildings down by placing shaped cutter charges at the columns and beams around the building and then detonating them in a very precise order, synchronistically timed floor by floor, so that the building can come down symmetrically, if that's what they desire, or in any other way that they desire, and generally very quickly, as you see here. This is not something that fire can do. It's something that only a handful of the top controlled demolition companies in the world can even handle. And there's a set of features associated with these controlled demolitions. And we're going to look at these as we compare them to Building 7. Beginning with, is there a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the structure of this building? Well, here it is with Dan Rather.
Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself. Now we're going to videotape the collapse of this building. It's an amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before, when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
Well, that's very helpful and intuitive insight by Dan. We've all seen in our country, at least, the old hotels in Las Vegas that they bring down with controlled demolition, and that's pretty much what it looks like. It does come down suddenly, as you saw. It's standing still, and then after the east penthouse goes, 6 seconds later, the whole thing comes down. And does it come down straight? Let's take a look. Pretty straight down, pretty symmetrical, the second feature of controlled demolition. Notice, by the way, the penthouse, the main penthouse and screen wall, come down just a half a second prior to the overall collapse of this building, indicating what? That the core columns underneath that main penthouse and screen wall all had to have been taken out at once. This is 24 core columns and then the perimeters. So, and yes, it falls mostly into its own footprint, which is centered in the property of the building, as you see. Well, maybe we should just compare it to a controlled demolition on the right, building 7 on the left. Is there any similarity? Is there enough similarity to warrant an investigation, at least, into the possible use of explosives? Especially since it looks exactly like a controlled demolition, especially since fire, the official cause of this building's collapse, has never brought down a skyscraper, ever. How do we bring the building straight down? Well, you have to remove those 24 core columns, followed by those perimeter columns, within a fraction of a second of each other, synchronistically timed floor by floor. Does fire have that level of precision? These are questions that building professionals need to answer but are conveniently avoiding. Yet these few small, isolated, scattered fires are bringing that building down with that precision. How fast is the building coming down? Well, physics teachers show us that it comes down at free fall acceleration. How fast is that? I'm going to drop this bottle. 3, 2, 1. That is free fall acceleration. How does it fall at free fall? Well, because there's no resistance underneath the bottle. But there's 40,000 tons of resistance holding this building up, 3 to 5 times stronger than it needed to be to hold it up for the life of the building. Yeah, it's as if 8 stories were removed, allowing the building to fall at free fall, meaning no column gave any resistance at all. Is there the total dismemberment of the structural steel frame? We have a 47-story, moment-resisting steel frame building where the columns and the beams are rigidly welded to each other, many of them. Most of them, they can't just give way like a house of cards, and yet it falls to 4 or 6-story pile. Buildings that collapse naturally, they fall over to the path of least resistance. They don't fall straight down through themselves. The beams and columns are not dismembered one from the other. The concrete is not pulverized to a fine powder. And witnesses generally don't hear sounds of explosions or see flashes of light. They claim that there's no explosives found and no witnesses, and yet we have plenty of witnesses.
And then it was like another 2-3 seconds, you heard explosions, like boom! And it's like a distinct sound. It's not like when the compression, like boom, 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 like floors that were dropping and collapsing. This was boom, and like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something.
And we have several other witnesses that we would show you. Have we more time? Explosions like this one heard in the late morning of 9/11. This is after the collapse of the Twin Towers. So, but none of these explosions or witnesses of explosions are included in the final report by NIST. What do the experts say?
Danny Jawenko is the expert on this in Europe. What did he say?
This is controlled demolition. Circulated. There is no score. This is an opdracht gebeurd. Dat heeft een team gedaan van experts.
And 100 structural engineers among the 3,000 architects and engineers like Kamal Obaid in Berkeley. A localized failure in a steel frame building like World Trade Center 7 cannot cause a catastrophic collapse like a house of cards without a simultaneous and patterned release of several of its columns at key locations within the building. Does that sound like something fire can do? What about foreknowledge? If there was going to be a controlled demolition, we'd know about it in advance. Well, some of us would, like these guys, who are, by the way, walking away from Building 7, hearing an explosion behind them, looking over their shoulder back at the building, and then looking straight into the CNN camera and saying this. The building is about to blow up, flame and debris coming down. How do they know that?
At the last few seconds, he took his hand off and you heard 3, 2, 1.
Kevin McPadden, former Air Force medic, was listening to a radio held in the hand of a Red Cross worker, having been pulled 6 blocks back away, and he's hearing a countdown. Do fires bring buildings down to countdowns? How about the BBC? They announced the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it ever happened. BBC is really good. On the job, unprecedented collapse of a high-rise for the first time ever due to fire. And they're announcing it. They apologize for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day. Does that make them psychic? Well, we have all 10 key characteristics and some very uncharacteristic features of controlled demolition. This is direct evidence of destruction with explosives. Fire doesn't account for any one of these characteristics. The fires have caused less robust structures to collapse, and when they do so, it's asymmetrically, gradually. It follows the laws of entropy, chaotic, asymmetrical collapse. It would fall over in stages. With additional circumstantial corroborative evidence, this is proof of controlled demolition, at least to the 3,000 architects and engineers that we represent. By the way, if 3,000 architects and engineers signed a statement warning you that your house was in danger of collapse, what would you do? Yeah, I'd get the hell out of there too. And so we have hired the University of Alaska, one of the top structural forensic engineers in our country, Professor Leroy Halsey, the chairman of the Department of Civil Engineering, to conduct a 3-year, $300,000 study of a finite element analysis of this building to find out, could it have come down due to fire as NIST claims? And by the way, NIST claimed that 7 years after 9/11, they had been juggling this hot potato, and they finally come up normal office fires brought the building down. Remember, no plane hit this third building. There were only 2 planes at the World Trade Center. We'll find out what they did. But Professor Halsey's doing the analysis that Congress charged NIST to do, but NIST failed miserably. And what has he found out? Through his finite element analysis, already declared publicly, this building did not come down due to fire. That report is coming out before the end of the year, and we will have it, and we will take it to all the universities, not only in our country, but all around the world, including here in Switzerland. Now, if Building 7 was a controlled demolition, and is part of the 9/11 series of disasters or conspiracy. The official narrative is a conspiracy, right? 19 fundamentalist hijackers conspired to hijack these planes and ran them into buildings. Building 7 not hit by a plane, but it went down also. Do the math on that one, by the way. Two planes bring down 3 buildings. It doesn't quite work. So it causes us to question what happened at the World Trade Center Twin Towers also. Well, let's try to get on the same page because it's been 17 years now.
On September 11th, we learned that 4 passenger planes were hijacked and taken radically off course. Within an hour, 2 of the planes had flown into the enormous steel towers of the World Trade Center, creating fires and eventually toppling them. Dazed by the news, the American public soon believed the fires in the towers had burned so hot they caused the steel frames of the buildings to give way. A myth developed, fed by official sources through the media to a bewildered audience. Elements of the myth. The impact of the airplanes, gallons of burning jet fuel, steel melting, the buildings failing and suddenly imploding. In a mere 10 seconds, 110 stories hurtled earthward, pulverizing into dust. Right from the start, on the street itself, the official story was born.
Come out of nowhere and just right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
The myth bled into the FEMA report and was echoed by the experts.
It was the combination of the impact load doing great damage to the building, followed by the fire that caused collapse.
Well, here we have, in a pretty much a nutshell, the official cause of this building's collapse. And what we're going to do today is apply the model of controlled demolition features and see if it applies or not to the Twin Towers collapse. Beginning with, is there a sudden onset of destruction? Let's look at the North Tower first. It's standing still, and then it suddenly moves. There's no jolt, hesitation, impact, entropy, falling over, none of that. How about the South Tower? It's standing still, and then it begins falling. So, yes, there's a sudden onset of destruction. How about, is there a patterned set of explosions and flashes of light? Well, we didn't know until August of 2005 that the New York City had this treasure trove of testimonies orally recorded by the first responders in October of 2001, but we didn't know about it until 4 years later. And what did we find here? That 118 of the 500 first responders that were recorded found evidence of explosions being blown around in the building, seeing explosions, seeing flashes of light. Here's a couple of them. We felt the ground shake. You could see the towers sway, and then it just came down. Now, again and again with these witnesses, there's this order of events. They feel something under the ground, or they see this phenomena before the towers begin to collapse. That's extremely important because we're told by the official story that all that phenomena is a result of the towers collapsing. But no, look at this. All of a sudden, the ground just started shaking. Felt like a train running under my feet. The next thing we know, we look up and the tower is collapsing. It shook my bones. Shortly before the first tower came down, I remember feeling the ground shaking, heard a terrible noise, and then debris just started flying everywhere. Let's look at the North Tower compared to a controlled demolition. Is there any similarity in the first 4 seconds? Is there enough similarity to warrant an investigation into the possible use of explosives, especially since it looks exactly like a controlled demolition in the first 4 seconds? should it not have been the first hypothesis that they looked at seriously instead of the last one in a set of frequently asked questions years later that people were asking? Gosh, it looks like a controlled demolition. You ever see professional demolition where they set charges on certain floors and you hear pop, pop, pop? When I heard that friggin' noise, that's when I saw the building coming down. How about the South Tower on the right, a known controlled demolition on the left? Is there any similarity in the first 4 seconds? Enough similarity to warrant an investigation into the possible use of explosives? But no, it was relegated and it never seriously examined. I thought terrorists planted explosives somewhere in the building. That's how loud it was, a crackling explosive. Boom, boom, boom. Just like they were trying to take down a building, a controlled demolition. Pop, pop, pop. Well, the official story tells us that the top portion of these buildings, in the case of the North Tower, 15 stories, drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. But as you can see, what's really happening is the top portion is destroying itself. In the first 4 seconds, it's gone. There's nothing left after that to crush the rest of the building down to the ground.
Something of this kind is what we should have seen when the top section of the towers collapsed onto the lower one. The upper and lower sections should have mutually destroyed each other until all the energy is dissipated and the system comes to a rest. Alternatively, as shown in this experiment with two towers made of snow, the top section could have fallen off to the side after the initial collapse. What could not have happened is this.
A little tiny chunk of the building can't possibly fall and crush the entire structure below it.
This is such a simple, fundamental concept that architects and engineers were astonished in seeing it totally ignored by NIST.
This is high school physics, and our whole society is being led to believe that these fundamental laws of physics, hard science, don't apply anymore.
So we have submitted peer-reviewed papers to journals, some of which, like this one, was accepted. Others, like the American Society of Civil Engineers, the journals that they govern, they were rejected when we challenged their reasoning. What was the official reason for the refusal to publish the challenge? They said it was out of scope. Well, it wasn't out of scope to challenge the very assumptions made by those supporting the official story. Besides, none of the photos or videos show a section of the building at the top crushing down. It's just missing. What you see is something quite different, more like the volcanic eruption in the Tongan Sea, with upward, outward arching streamers, freely flying structural sections trailed by thick white smoke clouds. A geometry of fireworks. Well, do we have a symmetrical progression that's straight down, but unlike Building 7, not inside the footprint, a perfect implosion, but a very explosive symmetrical straight down event, 1,200 feet in diameter, and we can see that we have symmetrical progression all the way down, despite the asymmetry from the plane damage into the building, the asymmetry from the fires up there, and the asymmetry given that, particularly in the case of the South Tower, the building's falling off of its center. What we have is a complete symmetrical arrangement of structural steel delivered 1,200 feet in diameter. Then the steel frame is completely broken up, well beyond the boundary of ground zero, by the way. This is the nice, neat implosion of Building 7 here versus the very explosive event that the Twin Towers were. By the way, if 100,000 tons of structural steel is delivered outside the footprint of each of these towers, what's left to crush the building? Think about that. It's not there. It can't happen like that. Number four, what about the ejections of building materials at the lower, at the floors? In the case of the South Tower, all at once, these on the left side particularly, dozens of isolated explosive ejections known as squibs in the controlled demolition industry, indicating the complete dissolution of this top section, which is why it comes down in on itself and can't drive the rest of the building down. It's being destroyed from within. In addition, 20, 40, even 60 stories down, we have these squibs, which are pulverized building materials. NIST says, oh, these are puffs of air being produced by that piston, that giant block of building that pushing that air down the elevator hoistways, and it's got to go out somewhere, right? No, these are pulverized building materials. It's not air. And if this the open office architecture created by the engineering innovation that happened at the World Trade Center, where the perimeter columns were half the columns were pushed out to the perimeter, the remaining 47 core columns in the center allowed 20 meters of open office space, like this area right here. If that air came down the elevator hoistway and whooshed out into the open space, it would blow out all the windows if it blew out any of them, not these highly focalized, pinpoint accurate, violent ejections occurring at 160 to 200 feet per second, 50 meters per second. No, these are explosive speeds. It's documented. How fast is the building coming down now? Feature, the next feature. Well, here's 5 seconds, 8 seconds, 10 seconds. In a dozen seconds, the building is completely destroyed. 10 floors per second. You can't even clap your hands that fast. There's no time for those 282 columns to buckle. It just, a lot of them, more steel than glass, that this progression of crushing columns is going through. Well, what happened to them? If they weren't crushed, because there's no time to crush them, the building's coming down again at near free fall acceleration, as fast as this bottle that I'm afraid to drop again. Number six, a total shattering of the structural steel frame. The National Fire Protection Association Guide 921, a high order damage. If you have high order damage, characterized by the shattering of the structure, producing small pulverized debris with the building completely demolished, you might have explosions. That's what the investigation guide says. And that's exactly what we have. The building is completely shattered. The columns are broken up into their 37 and a half foot lengths. Is there lateral ejection? Well, let's follow these freely flying structural steel sections landing 300 to 600 feet in every direction, trailed by thick white smoke clouds, which we'll come to. What about this one? Back to, forward to, back to. That's 45 degrees. It starts out horizontal. Wait a minute. How does gravity work? Down. What's going on here, pushing out a 4-ton structural steel section horizontally, landing more than 300 to 600 feet away? It's enough energy to fire a 200-pound cannonball 3 miles. Well, where's that energy coming from? And there's thousands of these sections that are doing just that. Feature number eight, a pyroclastic-like clouds of pulverized concrete. Well, wait, there's 110 floors. The floors are 4 inches thick concrete and 8 inches thick concrete for about a dozen of them. What happened to them? Are they stacked up at the bottom here, like we would expect in a pancaking collapse, like in Mexico when it pancaked, that particular collapse? No, all we have is a 2-, 3-, 4-story pile of core columns, perimeter columns, and other miscellaneous steel. Where's all the concrete floors? Each of them were 110 acres. Each of them were an acre in size, and there's 110 of them. We don't find 50. We don't find 10. We don't find one. What happened to them? Oh, they're pulverized in midair before they get down. All the photos and videos show us exactly what happened to 90,000 tons of concrete in each of these floors, spread over lower Manhattan in a 3-square-mile area across New York. By the way, if 90,000 tons of concrete is pulverized in midair and spread outside the perimeter of each building, what was left to crush the building? Not the steel. That was outside the perimeter also. Not the concrete. We're talking 2/3 of the weight of this building is not accountable for in terms of crushing the building below, which is the official story, right? Feature number 9, extreme heat. Now, this is a very unusual feature of controlled demolition. But here it is. The National Fire Protection Association guide says, look for thermal effects, because if you have that, and we do, then you might have a reason to suspect incendiaries. Large volumes of gas and the large amount of heat released in chemical explosions cause rapidly expanding plumes in cauliflower shapes. In the case of each of these towers, 10 times the volume of the building in just 30 seconds. This is actually calculated by several. It takes a lot of heat to expand these clouds, as you see in all the photos. A lot more heat than is available at the time of the collapses, which is minimal, indicated by thick black smoke clouds, oxygen-starved fires. You need a lot of heat to expand those clouds, something on the order of this. Let's take a closer look.
Possibly the most important unexplained phenomenon at Ground Zero are the extremely high temperatures registered under the rubble for many weeks after the collapses. On September 16, NASA shot these thermographic images of Ground Zero, indicating unusually high temperatures at the base of the 3 collapsed buildings. Despite the heavy rains of September 14th, the hotspots registered peak temperatures of more than 1,300 degrees under the rubble. 10 days later, the fires kept burning.
What's to explain, Governor, the smoke that still comes out?
There's still fire down below. There is such an incredibly deep pile of rubble, and the tower goes down 5-6 stories underground.
Well, we had ABC crews come back just in the last few minutes and telling us there are still flames coming out of the base of the Trade Towers.
For the rescue workers, this became an additional burden on their already gruesome task.
Out still the rubble, it's still, I believe, 1,100 degrees. The guy's boots just melt within a few hours.
On October 8th, the hotspots under the 3 collapsed buildings remained clearly visible. 6 weeks later, as the excavations progressed, the situation seemed only to get worse.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And this is 6 weeks later, almost 6 weeks later. And as we get closer to the center of this, it gets hotter and hotter. It's probably 1,500 degrees. We got some small windows into what we thought was a board at some point, and it looked like an oven. You know, it was just warm inside. It was a bright, bright reddish orange color.
The consequences of such extreme temperatures were quite visible on the steel that was being extracted from the rubble.
The grapplers were pulling stuff out. Big sections of iron that were literally on fire on the other end. They would hit the air and burst into flames, which was pretty spooky to see.
We would create an air pocket by moving steel, fueling the fires on the ground. But, you know, these underground fires were just the fires of hell.
If you could make a video of what you perceive hell would look like, from fire shooting up at times, that's what would happen. You would be in the middle of it. It would look like steel. And then fire just would pop up. Fire would come out. And I wanted to put boots that would have melted. And then the hose would come over and we'd try to put that part out. I got there.
Charlie Ventures was a supervisor of removal operations at Ground Zero. From PBS's America Rebuilds page, we read, Vitcher's crew picked up 40 to 60 foot long pieces of steel impaled in the pile, where the bottom 20 feet would be glowing red hot. Vitcher said, trucks loaded with steel would pass by and you could feel the back of your neck burning standing 20 feet away. In an article called A Dangerous Worksite, the U.S. Department of Labor wrote, underground fires burned at temperatures of 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. This was confirmed by Mayor Giuliani.
There were fires of 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit below the ground.
The Journal of the American Society of Safety Engineers wrote, thermal measurements taken by helicopter each day showed underground temperatures ranging from 400 to more than 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. 8 weeks later, and the fires still had not subsided.
You see how this debris is still smoking? That's when the fire is going to stay burning. 8 weeks later, we still got fires burning. I mean, these things are burning. At one point, I think they were about 2,800 degrees.
11 weeks later, and the fires kept burning.
As recently as the end of November, it was still 1,100 degrees down underneath the rubble.
As November turned into December, ice was noticed in the mornings above the ground, but the debris underneath was still smoldering.
The weird thing was it was very cold when we were up there. I believe it was in the middle of the winter, but the ground wasn't frozen. The ground kind of like bubbled underneath your feet, which was kind of strange to me.
It took until December 19, more than 3 months after the collapses, for the last underground fire to be extinct.
Well, we're talking about evidence of molten steel here, as you see by the material held in the hands of this crab claw excavator. It's falling out. It's liquid molten. They try to say, oh, this is aluminum or lead or something, but there's tons and tons and tons of it. Engineers like David Scott from Arup Associates, red hot steel being pulled from deep within the pile, dripping from the molten steel, says this firefighter. Pools of literally molten steel, says the president of the cleanup company. The concrete was flowing like lava, which takes 3,200 degrees Fahrenheit, 1,600 degrees Celsius. I didn't even know concrete could melt. And so here it is wrapped around the handgun in Building 6, another building we don't even have a chance to talk about. Seeing the molten steel, uncovering red-hot metal beams, ranging from molten metal still red-hot weeks after the event, molten steel at the heart of the tower's remains.
You get down below and you see molten steel running down the channel lines. Like you're in a foundry. Lava. Lava.
Okay. Streams of molten metal that leaked from the hot cores. Metal dripping from a beam. Molten steel beams dripping molten steel. A river of steel flowing. Who says this? The World Trade Center structural engineer himself, Leslie Robertson. Well, you can see the molten metal pouring out of the South Tower minutes prior to its collapse. Nist says, well, that must have been aluminum, but aluminum doesn't glow yellow, orange in daylight conditions like this. The steel members in the debris pile that appear to have been partly evaporated, that's 2,000 degrees Celsius. Steel members, and this is documented also by Abulhazen Astani Azal. I saw melting of girders at the World Trade Center. This is a structural engineer that had the National Science Foundation grant to study the steel. FEMA documents this very carefully in the Appendix C of the Building Performance Assessment Report that came out in 2002 before NIST took over the investigation and threw out this valuable metallurgical examination of the steel, in which they document never-before-observed eutectic reactions, intergranular melting, turning a solid steel girder into Swiss cheese, like this piece of steel from World Trade Center 7. Rapid oxidation, sulfidation, intergranular melting. Liquid iron, that's molten iron. That's 1,200, 1,400 degrees Celsius. Hot corrosion attack on the steel. It's very well defined. In fact, it's called the deepest mystery uncovered in the investigation, according to the New York Times, but it was completely eliminated from the NIST report. This piece of World Trade Center Twin Towers steel thinned to almost razor sharpness from half-inch thick. Its edges curled like a paper scroll. Well, how do we get those kinds of temperatures? The fires are only said to be about 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit, 650 Celsius. NIST claims 1,800 degrees, maybe 900 Celsius. Steel doesn't melt until 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit, 1,500 Celsius. Well, hydrocarbons, which is building materials and jet fuel, by the way, only burn 600 to 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit. Sorry if I'm going back and forth on these units. The jet fuel only burns, according to its manufacturer, in open air temperature. Open air, it burns about 600 degrees Fahrenheit, 315 Celsius. So it can't account for these kinds of temperatures, the jet fuel, not at all. But what can? Because we can tell by the color of molten materials like this, molten metal, what its temperature is. We're exceeding 1,300 Celsius here. What can cause those temperatures? As we look at feature number 7, forensic evidence of shaped charges, or in this case, incendiaries, could thermite have produced all that molten metal? Well, what is thermite anyway?
An incendiary used by the military, thermite is a compound of iron oxide and aluminum, which when ignited, sustains an extreme heat reaction, creating molten iron. In just 2 seconds, thermite can reach temperatures over 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit, quite enough to liquefy steel. We know that open-air fires cannot burn hot enough to melt steel, but metal had melted at the base of the towers. Appendix C of the FEMA report describes sulfur residues on the World Trade Center steel. The New York Times called this the deepest mystery of all. Sulfur slightly lowers the melting point of iron, and iron oxide and iron sulfide have formed on the surface of the structural steel. Sulfur used with thermite is called thermate, producing even faster results.
Maybe we're getting somewhere here, because if thermite were used, this incendiary that cuts through steel like a hot knife through butter, then it could explain the presence of molten iron, elemental iron, not melted steel, but iron. And so we haven't used iron in skyscrapers for 100 years or so. It could also explain the extreme heat, because it produces 4,000 degrees Fahrenheit, 2,000 degrees Celsius. It could also explain the presence of sulfur, because sulfur is added to thermite to become thermate, much more effective at cutting through steel. So, in fact, the National Fire Protection Association says, look for unusual residues that could arise from thermite, like magnesium. Well, NIST says they found no supporting evidence to suggest that explosives were used. A year later, they finally write, we never looked for them. Wait a minute, you can't find what you're not going to be willing to look for. But others did, like, for instance, Stephen Jones, professor of nuclear physics, formerly from Brigham Young University, says, hey, if thermite were used, it'd produce a characteristic burn pattern, a white, yellow, hot liquid like we see pouring out of the South Tower. It would also produce a whitish cloud of aluminum oxide ash like we see rising off the top of that liquid pouring molten iron and trailed by thick white smoke clouds. Wait a minute. Structural steel is not combustible. It doesn't light in a fire. So why are the ends of these beams trailed by thick white smoke clouds? That could answer that question as well, huh? Thermite? And he does analysis on the ends of these beams, a piece of slag sent to him by a sculptor who's working on the beam and heard about Dr. Jones's work. And he finds through X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy the ingredients of thermite, iron, aluminum, sulfur, manganese, etc. Well, you can make in your own backyard thermite cutter charges that cut cleanly through steel beams like John Cole, civil engineer, did. But you can also get a hold of these patented devices that are much more effective, in fact, than typical shaped cutter charges like that use C4 and RDX, typical high-energy explosives that are used in controlled demolitions. This would be much more expensive. You'd need a bigger budget. It cuts through much thicker sections of structural steel in just milliseconds. So it's just a much better solution. In fact, there are devices like this made whose casing is made of what? Consolidated thermite. In other words, the casing itself burns up in the process, leaving what? Pools of molten iron. Well, if that were true, what would be left in all the World Trade Center dust? According to the U.S. Geological Survey, doing their toxicological studies on all this dust, we have billions of what? Previously molten iron microspheres, about the diameter of a human hair, billions and billions of them, all the dust samples. They can't explain where they came from. They don't know, but they document it very, very carefully. In fact, they're in all the dust samples, and R.J. Lee, another international engineering consulting firm, finds them, documents them, says these are formed during the event, not before, during the construction of the building, not afterward by the iron workers, but during the event. In fact, up to 6% of the samples, and some of these samples, are composed of previously molten iron microspheres. Wow, well, how does thermite work? In this small experiment, slowing that down halfway, we see thousands of what look like sparks, but they're molten iron microspheres, which is one of the byproducts of a thermite reaction. Could that be what's responsible for all the toasting of the tops of these cars surrounding the World Trade Center? What other heat source could be responsible for that? And what else was found in all of this dust? Well, 7 samples were collected by a team of 8 international scientists, and they find the same curious red-gray chips in all of these samples. Red on one side, gray on the other. They look like paint chips, don't they? But they do some detailed analysis, and they're attracted to a magnet, so they have iron in them. Get real curious. They zoom in on the red side and do X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy, and they find iron, aluminum, silica, oxygen, carbon, chiefly iron and aluminum. The ingredients of what? Thermite. What's that doing in all the World Trade Center dust? They get even more curious, zoom in with an electron microscope, and find particles, rhomboidal-shaped cubed particles of iron oxide and aluminum platelets, but so small, they are 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. And they're set in this organic bed of oxygen, silica, carbon, which is important because that's organic material, which in TNT explosives is responsible for the rapid gas expansion, which pushes things over and destroys them. So here you have an incendiary that's been mixed with made more explosive. And there's been studies on this stuff too. It's called superthermite. It's made by Lawrence Livermore Lab and Los Alamos Lab. And at 420 degrees or so Celsius, what happens to them? They produce energy. They ignite at that and producing much more energy. And that's the same thing that happened in these four samples collected by this team of scientists. What happens when they ignite? They produce spheres. These spheres, the same spheres or spheres with the same chemical signature as the spheres found in the World Trade Center. So you see, we know where those spheres came from. They came from these red-gray chips, which have the ingredients of thermite in them, and they issue the typical spherically shaped emission, and these are clear corroborative experimentally reproducible evidence that could be taken to a court of law to bring to bear justice on behalf of the victims of 9/11, the 3,000 people murdered that day, and all of the people murdered since, and all of the other injustices that have happened in the last 17 years. As if we didn't know where these spheres came from, they're actually found attached to partially ignited red-gray chips. It's very clear, like you see here and here. So, you see, when you get these particles down to the nanoscale, the surface volume increases exponentially. So you have an incendiary that's been designed for extreme rapid chemical reaction, and it becomes much more explosive. It's not made in a cave in Afghanistan. This is very advanced, sophisticated processes that are made in the most advanced laboratories from the defense industry or the offense industry that we have. So this team of scientists concludes that this red layer is unreacted thermitic material incorporating nanotechnology. It should not be there in all the dust. But surely the steel, this other piece of evidence, was protected under the rules of the preservation of evidence in the largest and most perplexing structural failure in history. No, 400 truckloads a day were carted away from the site, starting just 2 weeks after 9/11, put on a barge sent to China for recycling. This is the illegal destruction of evidence in a crime scene. There's no other way to call it. As Bill Manning did, editor-in-chief of Fire Engineering Magazine, crucial evidence that could answer many questions is on the slow boat to China, showing an astounding ignorance of government officials to the value of a thorough scientific investigation. The destruction and removal of evidence must stop immediately. But it didn't. And so that's why we have 3,000 architects and engineers bringing the 10 key characteristic features and some very uncharacteristic features of controlled demolition to your attention today here in Switzerland. It's direct evidence of explosives. Fire doesn't create any of these features, let alone all of them, with additional circumstantial corroborative testimony, which we've begun to show you today. That's why we think we're pretty darn sure we have proof of controlled demolition. How many of you at this point, I asked you those three questions at the beginning, I just want to follow up by asking you, how many of us at this point pretty much still are on board with the official story that the buildings came down by jet plane impacts and the ensuing fires? I'm going to get a hand, handle. Be brave. You're among friends here. One, is there some more? We had like a whole lot before. Just one? How many of you are unsure still? You might still be unsure. We've only been here an hour. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. And how many of you think at this point we need a new investigation of the destruction of these three towers? Go like this? Okay, a sea of hands. That's very helpful because if that's true, then guess what? You've got some work to do, and I would like to invite you to join the family of truth researchers and tellers, people who want to realize the implications of these controlled demolitions, which Daniela Ganser is going to be talking about the implications of this, because obviously it's not just about buildings. Who cares about buildings? We care about people. We care about society. We care about the massive changes that have swept through around the world in countries, including Switzerland, since 9/11. So I'm encouraging you to support the work of AE 9/11 Truth, and you can do that on our website, AE 911 Truth. www.thework.org. And that's very, very important. The work we're doing is extremely critical because it's one of the key dominoes in a long line of dominoes. If we knock this domino over, a lot of the other ones dealing with major problems that have been pointed out by our other speakers in our society. This is the one that hit me over the head in 2006. I am not the same. You may have noticed. I have a mission now. I'm on fire. I want the truth to get out to every person, every government in our world, every media outlet, and until we have governments that will sponsor and call for an investigation into the destruction of these towers. Thank you for caring about the truth of 9/11. Thank you very much.